This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals only. Welcome to the Oncology Knowledge into Practice podcast, where we discuss game-changing topics in clinical oncology with leading experts in the field. In this series, we are considering best practice when managing cancers of the thyroid gland. This series is accredited, so if you would like to receive CME credits, be sure to listen via our website at oncology.knowledgeintopractice.com. If you're listening on another platform, you'll find a link in the episode notes. This episode is supported by an educational grant from Eli Lilly, who've had no influence on the content or the choice of faculty. I am your host, Daniel Ward, and in our last episode, we discussed the guidance around when and how to test for biomarkers of response to precision medicines. In today's episode, we will talk about the molecular basis for resistance to RET-targeted therapy in advanced thyroid cancer. To answer our questions on this topic, we welcome the expertise of Professor Bruce Robinson, who is Professor of Medicine and an endocrinologist at the University of Sydney in Australia. But first, we'll spend a few minutes covering recent published literature. If you're already familiar with this topic, please feel free to skip ahead to the interview at the 5 minute mark. Genetic alterations demonstrated in tumour cells, often obtained by a simple blood test known as liquid biopsy, are the basis for the precision medicine approach to advanced cancer. In the case of advanced thyroid cancer, selective RET inhibitors have demonstrated benefit for treatment of when RET gene alterations are demonstrated. This is a welcomed advance as cytotoxic chemotherapy and immunotherapy have historically demonstrated poor results in patients with advanced thyroid cancer. However, because response to RET inhibitors is not universal among patients with RET alterations, and acquired resistance to treatment may develop, further understanding of resistance to RET inhibition is needed. Potential mechanisms for resistance to RET-targeted therapies were recently described by Roman Gill et al. In the March 2022 issue of Cancer Treatment Reviews. The first involves the presence of coexisting somatic or germline mutations of the RET gene that may confer resistance to RET-targeted therapies. For example, substitution mutations at glycine 810 in the RET active site are the main mechanism of acquired resistance to selective RET inhibitors. Other substitution mutations that have been found to confer resistance to selective RET inhibitors include RET Y806CN, RET V738A, RET L7303I, and RET E732K. The second potential mechanism for resistance to RET-targeted therapies involves the dynamic interaction between thyroid cancer cells and the tumor microenvironment. The balance of this interaction may shift and foster immune escape for thyroid cancer cells. However, though the influence of tumor microenvironment on cancer behavior is widely studied, the specific impact on RET inhibitors remains to be determined. The third potential mechanism for resistance to RET-targeted therapies, presented by Roman Gill et al., involves bypass signaling. Here, alternative oncogenic drivers may bypass the RET pathway yet inappropriately activate the downstream RET signaling cascade, ultimately increasing immune evasion of the cancer cells. This mechanism is theoretical with regard to selective RET inhibitors, and given the relatively limited clinical experience with selective RET inhibitors, there's little evidence for off-target mechanisms of resistance. Increasing knowledge of RET mutation characteristics, combined with increased use of next-generation sequencing in clinical practice, may lead to new therapeutic approaches. For example, resistance to multikinase inhibitors, secondary to acquired gatekeeper mutations, was one of the factors underlying the development of selective RET inhibitors. In turn, greater knowledge of RET mutations within the context of selective RET inhibitors is driving the development of the next generation of inhibitors. Improved understanding of aberrant signal amplification processes may also suggest effective strategies for combination therapy. For instance, in vitro studies support a role for mTOR in the amplification of RET signaling. A phase 1 trial demonstrated positive results when an mTOR inhibitor was added to a tyrosine kinase inhibitor in RET-driven tumors. It should be noted, however, that many of the studies related to mechanisms of resistance to RET inhibition have been completed in the non-small cell lung cancer space, and the degree of extrapolation to thyroid cancer is not yet known. Although targeted treatment strategies have shown promising results in preclinical and early phase clinical trials, further studies are required to define the most efficient paradigms for incorporation of precision medicine into clinical practice for patients with advanced thyroid cancer. Having briefly summarized this paper, let's begin our discussion with our invited experts, here to help us gain perspective on the developing approach to RET-resistant thyroid cancer, is Professor Bruce Robinson from the University of Sydney. So firstly, what is your experience with the use of liquid biopsy and next-generation sequencing at the time of disease progression in advanced thyroid cancer to identify and address resistance to RET-targeted therapies? Do you think this will or has already become standard clinical practice?
So I think the answer is it's becoming standard practice. We're in the process of developing this at our hospital in Sydney. It took some time to get the liquid biopsy technique up and running, and we actually had someone go to Boston to learn how to do that. And I think many other institutions have done exactly the same. The sensitivity that's required to pick up very low levels of these mutant genes in the blood is quite challenging, and it is quite a special technique that people need to actually perfect. And then, of course, make sure they develop with appropriate controls so that they're not amplifying extraneous DNA that may be in the lab. So where does this now fit into our current management paradigm for patients with thyroid cancer? The answer is, I think, very firmly. Many of us now have been treating patients with poorly differentiated or radioactive iodine-resistant thyroid cancer, and also, I should say, medullary thyroid cancer now for many years with these tyrosine kinase molecules. And many of these patients have either mutations within the RET gene or rearrangements of the RET gene, in the case of differentiated thyroid cancer, that are readily detectable in blood samples. So our first goal has been actually to measure the amount of these abnormal gene products in the blood and to use that as a way of trying to gain a further understanding of the volume of disease or the extent of disease that a particular individual has. So, for example, one can actually measure the amount of disease circulating in the blood or gene abnormality, abnormal genes circulating in the blood prior to surgery. And then you can see that the volume of those mutant genes decreases following surgery. And then, of course, you can track the recurrence, if you like, or the redevelopment of these abnormal genes in a patient over the course of time subsequent to their original surgery. And the same applies, of course, to people who are being treated with tyrosine kinase inhibitors. You can show a decrease in the number of copies of mutant or rearranged RET in these people that occurs following the institution of these tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and then you can look for the redevelopment of it as they gradually become resistant to these drugs, as they inevitably will. We know that these drugs do not eliminate tumor cells, they inhibit their growth, and so we do expect that these people will all eventually develop resistance to the tyrosine kinase inhibitor therapy. So this is actually becoming, I think, standard of care, is almost good enough to say standard of care in managing this group of patients.
And what is your opinion regarding the potential mechanisms presented by Roman Gill et al. For resistance to RET-targeted therapies, i.e. RET mutations, tumour microenvironment, bypass signalling, and their impact on progression of advanced thyroid cancer?
We've been looking at this recently in order to write a review. There are a number of mechanisms for the development of resistance to these tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and they've been detailed in your question. One is the development of mutant RET molecules that occur in an additional clone of cells that may occur in a patient. The second is changes in the tumour microenvironment. And then the third, and probably the least well understood, is the use by the tumour of alternate pathways that enable growth of the tumour, pathways which bypass the gene pathway which has been inhibited by your tyrosine kinase inhibitor. Now, probably the best understood of these at the moment, from a RET point of view, is the development of mutations within the RET gene itself. And again, these can be followed as they develop using liquid biopsy. And that's now one of the things that we and others are starting to do. We're doing it in collaboration with a number of centres around the world, is to actually look at the development of these mutations and try to see whether we can actually develop a model which might enable us to say to a person, it appears that you're developing these additional mutations within Rett, and it therefore might be time for us to think about switching you from a very targeted Rett tyrosine kinase inhibitor to one with a broader pattern of tyrosine kinase inhibition. Now, that's very relevant because there's now been one study, certainly in radioactive iodine refractory thyroid cancer, which has shown that when people develop resistance to one tyrosine kinase inhibitor, they may actually continue to respond to a second one with a different spectrum of TK inhibition. So being able to characterize the development of these mutations even before there is really good clinical evidence of disease progression on the basis of scans or increases in thyroglobulin or calcitonin could actually be very valuable, because at the moment, unfortunately, by the time we often recognize that disease is progressing and that people have developed resistance, their performance status is so poor that changing them to an alternative therapy is really quite difficult. So I think there is potentially a role for liquid biopsy and the identification of these altered RET genes as being a way of predicting when it might be appropriate for us to change a person from one TKI to another. Now, the second and third mechanisms of resistance that we talked about, tumor microenvironment and alternate signaling pathways being utilized, there's again a fair amount of information about the tumor microenvironment, but it's a very heterogeneous group of mechanisms which contribute to drug resistance occurring through the microenvironment. And thirdly, the use of alternate pathways. We can identify these pathways, but the challenge we have is there are not always drugs available which can then inhibit the bypass pathway. So you're really in a difficult position, even if you do identify each of these latter two causes of drug resistance, to do anything about it.
Do you believe that resistance to specific RET inhibitors in advanced thyroid cancer is a solvable problem? Or rather, will it become like a game of whack-a-mole with new resistance mechanisms arising in response to each subsequent therapeutic strategy?
To a degree, it will become a game of whack-a-mole. But I also feel quite strongly that there's evidence that's now accumulating that the institution of second-line therapy does definitely have a role in people in whom resistance to the first line of therapy develops. We have evidence from the recently published COSMIC 311 study showing that once a person develops resistance to lenvatinib or sorafenib, that changing them to cabozantinib, if they can tolerate it, may actually give them further progression-free survival. And that's really the first of the studies which has demonstrated that. The second thing that's really important to understand is that many of the big pharmaceutical companies now have the wherewithal to actually do in silico modelling of the consequences of mutations, particularly in the RET gene. So some of the newly described mutations, particularly those at codon 810, the RET 806 mutation, the RET 738, 730, and 732 mutations, the consequences of those mutations can actually be modelled in silico. And it's then possible for pharmaceutical gurus to be able to then develop additional tyrosine kinase molecules which can inhibit the new mutation that's been acquired by these people. And although that hasn't happened from a clinical point of view at the moment, I know it's possible. We published some work looking at the development of one of these solvent front mutations in one of our patients with medullary thyroid cancer, and there was a group in Melbourne who published a similar mutation in a patient with non-small cell lung cancer. And the company was able to model what a subsequent inhibitor of that new mutation would look like. Now, unfortunately, both patients succumbed before they could be trialed on that new molecule. But the ability to actually do the modelling was extraordinary. It really was extraordinary. And this wasn't done by standard X-ray crystallography of the mutated RET protein. It was done by in silico modeling of what the mutated protein would look like, and then the development of a drug which would have putative inhibitory effects on that mutation. So really, quite extraordinary drug development, I think, is possible. And we probably will see more of that. And it may even be that within our lifetimes, we'll see that being done on an individual basis, that a person will have a liquid biopsy whilst they're on a tyrosine kinase inhibitor. That liquid biopsy will reveal a clone of cells that have developed a new RET mutation. You'll be able to go to a company and say, with this RET mutation, can you model the consequences of that? And now can you produce an inhibitor of that mutation that the patient could also be administered? So I think it's a fast-moving field with a lot of moving parts, one of which is the use of liquid biopsy, which I think is going to make a fundamental difference to our ability to get on top and potentially get ahead of the management of these patients with drug-resistant disease.
And finally, how applicable are data regarding resistance to RET-targeted therapies in NSCLC to resistance in advanced thyroid cancer, in your opinion?
Look, this is only an opinion, as your question implies. And the answer is, I think, very applicable. There's no real reason to expect that a mutated gene within a non-small cell lung cancer would really behave any differently to a mutated gene in a thyroid cancer. So I think we can actually learn a lot of lessons, particularly about RET, but also about a number of other genetic rearrangements by studying them in different tumour types. Now, I mean, that's already being done in some of these basket trials that many of the big pharmaceutical companies are doing. They don't actually seek out patients with a particular type of cancer, like breast cancer or lung cancer or bowel cancer. What they seek out is groups of patients who've got the same mutation, whether it be in a breast, a bowel, or a lung cancer. What they're interested in is studying the pharmacology and the effects of particular inhibitors of these gene mutations in a range of tumor types, because obviously that gives them not only a bigger market, but also a better ability to infer what you observe in one tumor type to another tumor type. So I think this is an area where we've got a lot to learn. And our better understanding of the genetics of a range of different tumor types will be very, very valuable in the management of patients in the very near future. We've already seen that with the use of selpercatinib in non-small cell lung cancer and thyroid cancer, where, again, these mutations that had developed causing resistance to selpercatinib were modelled so as to enable a potential new inhibitor of the new mutation in RET to be developed and potentially administered to a patient. Not that it ever was, but I know there was work done in cell lines in vitro to show that you could inhibit the new mutation with the new chemical or drug that the company had developed. In all, this is a very exciting area. It's a very exciting area. It takes personalized medicine and precision medicine to a new level. Where provided the resources for doing liquid biopsy are available, I think that we are going to be able to offer people at least second line and possibly even third line therapies for their drug-resistant tumours.
This brings us to the end of the episode. As you can see, this is an extremely interesting, evolving area of research. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the podcast on your favourite app or recommend us to your colleagues. We also have an Oncology Knowledge into Practice website, where you can find other episodes of the podcast, as well as other free educational resources in oncology. You can find a link to this in the episode notes, as well as all the references discussed today. Thanks for listening to this summary. For more updates on new data and publications, subscribe to the podcast so you can receive these as soon as they are released. And we look forward to joining you next time.